WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I am wearing my Coons Ford Reds today. Merry Christmas to everyone out there. I got my I have my purple ho-ho hat, and you know, I used to wear this up in the upper deck before Chad Steele threw me out of my seats, and I won't be wearing it probably this week. So I have worn a little bit during the segments. I just want to say happy Festivus to everybody, even if there isn't a Festivus. I'm not sure. Luke Jones joins us now. Luke, I'd love to tell you that this coffee from Rofo was free today. Not free today, but it was free on Saturday, and I had two because I'm stingy like that, and I was doing some cleaning on Christmas Day. Sunday did not go well. It has really been quite a slog for the entire franchise, right? I mean, I don't say low point or weird point, but losing four games in a row, that doesn't happen much around here. It doesn't happen in December much around here. And as history will have it, this has been an unusual season for the guys out in Owings Mills.
There's no question about it. I mean, I think the word is exhausting. I think it has to be. When you consider everything they've gone through right up, you know, starting with J.K. Dobbins going down. I mean, you can talk L.J. Fort the week before in that preseason game at Carolina. But, I mean, just the injuries they had before even getting to the season, the natural attrition that you're going to experience over the course of a season, that part hasn't felt too strange, but it's just the cumulative impact of that. And then now you throw a COVID, which is wreaking havoc on the whole league over the last couple of weeks. It's not just the Ravens, but the Ravens have certainly been on the higher end of it.
By the way, your church over the weekend, my wife's family, friends of mine, lots of friends of mine, people you and I both know well have COVID right now. So like it's everywhere. It's a societal issue here for the holiday, right?
Sure, but speaking more specifically about the NFL, I mean, the Ravens have clearly been on the higher end of that, and you have that on top of the injuries they've had all year. Can't say I'm shocked by what happened on Sunday. I mean, you saw the guys that they promoted via the practice squad on Saturday. I mean, we'll get into the quarterback position. I mean, Josh Johnson played admirably, but memorably. At the same time,
memorably, like literally, like that'll never be done again. That he gave them a chance to win. I mean, like,
well,
their defense.
Not really, because they didn't play defensively at all. So
understood. Sure. But in a normal flat world, that guy coming off the street in 10 days went out there and played well enough offensively to give them a chance to win. The ball going over their head or whatever. That I'll never forget. I'll never forget that guy came in and gave him a chance to win.
Sure. That's why Josh Johnson's been in the league for 14 years, off and on. You know, he's had some stints in the XFL and the Alliance of American Football, whatever it was called. I mean, he's been in some different leagues. He has quite a few stickers on the suitcase, as they used to talk about journeyman ball players way back when.
But I'm thinking how good you'd have to be to have 13 teams take a gander on you, right? Like,
sure.
Literally to say these guys suck and the backup sucks and the third string can't play. And, you know, and we've seen all of our Hard Knocks, right? You know what I mean? And you sat out there and watched these guys who aren't Tom Brady, who aren't Joe Flacco, who, you know, used to be Matt Schaub or one day might be John Beck, or, you know, these guys that never got a chance to do this. You know, just tip of the cap to that cat, right? I mean, to say he's been on 13 teams, that's an amazing thing. I mean, it really kind of is. And the fact that he went out there on Sunday, and I don't know much about him, but after the game, he talked about it being a blessing to be able to go out there and run around. And I thought, dude, you played pretty well. If that's the last time you show up on a football field, I'll tip my cap to Josh Johnson.
Yeah, no question about it. The problem was Josh Johnson doesn't play corner. He doesn't play safety. And that's where the Ravens were woefully incomplete, woefully inept, quite frankly. And so much of it just being because you're talking about guys that haven't been with the organization. In the case of Robert Jackson, and we saw Darrell Worley extensively, former Carolina Panther. I mean, these are guys that weren't with the team in Thanksgiving, let alone talking about guys that were here in training camp, where you're talking about deep depth and you're talking about, you know, someone like an Anthony Averett, who's gone from fourth round pick and backup to being their top corner here at the end of the season until he suffers a rib injury.
Brandon Stevens, for that matter, right?
Well, I mean, he's a third round rookie. But some of these guys are guys that were bouncing around the league, and we know that cornerback play is at a premium in this league. So guys that are out there and available in November and December typically tells you they're not going to be playing at a very high level, especially when they're coming in at such a late stage of the game and didn't have a whole.
You that brought up the 96 defense was the Vinny.
I brought up the 96 defense, and I've also made reference to the 2007 secondary, which the Ravens are there and I think have exceeded it at this point. You know, at least Ronnie.
In 96, I remember them bringing Eugene Daniel in at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Him sit with me at the barn. I mean, they were doing anything they could do, you know, just to bring in human beings, and that was in the first year. And they haven't had a whole lot of these. I mean, let's talk about DeCosta and George Kokinas and pro personnel and pro scouting to be able to know that Josh Johnson's out there, bring him in and get him out on the field and give you a chance to win. I tip of the cap to everybody because they're all working overtime on that part of it. Worley just doesn't show up, right? He's a guy you got to know about. Kayvon Seymour. I'm just trying to get the names in 38. I'm getting the numbers on these guys just in time for the season to end, right? But knowing about these guys and bringing them in and then getting them onto the field and then watching the ball go over their head to some degree, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, I mean, I don't know if those guys are a great example of the work of this front office. I think it's just where they are at this point. I mean, you're not going to find good corners out on the street this time of year. It's just reality. I mean, they had great depth at that position to the point where they didn't have room for guys like Nigel Warrior or have the patience or the room for a disappointing fifth-round pick in Sean Wade. But, you know, those guys that were ahead of them on the depth chart are all on IR or were on the COVID list the last game or two in the case of Chris Westry and, you know, what's left of Jimmy Smith in his career. But, you know, it just is what it is. I mean, I was almost, and I don't say this to be disparaging because everyone gets fired up during games. You get one of these every week for 4 months out of the year. So we know how fleeting the season can be. We know how fast it goes. But I had to almost be amused at the number of fans bent out of shape on social media on Sunday. I mean, you just get to a point, what do you expect? And look, that's not unique to Baltimore. That would be any fan base over the course of 3 hours on a Sunday when you give up 525 passing yards and four touchdowns to Joe Burrow, who, by the way, isn't being fitted for his gold jacket just yet. But Wink Martindale's defense certainly put him another, you know, inching a step closer towards doing that one day. I thought I'd mention that, which, you know, Joe Burrow took notice of that comment, even though I don't think it was that big of a deal in reality. But I mean, it's just, what do you really expect when you're talking about losing Anthony Averett in the first quarter? I mean, Tavon Young exits in the fourth quarter and didn't seem like it was anything that serious. But by the end of the game, though, you're finishing a football game, a huge football game with major AFC North and playoff implications. And you have Kevon Seymour, Darryl Worley, and Robert Jackson as your top three corners. Three guys that, you know, Seymour arrived in mid-September on the practice squad after they lost Marcus Peters and Chris Westry goes on IR. And, you know, so they were banged up. Jimmy Smith wasn't playing at that point in time. So he's been here at least for a few months. But in the case of Worley and Jackson, yeah, they got here in December. So I just don't know what you expect, especially when you're going up against a quality opponent. I think I saw a few people make this comment, and I agree with it. What happened on Sunday is really what people anticipated happening against Aaron Rodgers. Now, they didn't play well against Aaron Rodgers, but it wasn't this 500-plus yard, four-touchdown embarrassment. And let's face it, they were embarrassed. Their defense was absolutely embarrassed on Sunday. But at the same time, I can't say that I'm shocked by that outcome based on the players that were out there, based on the guys that weren't out there. You know, no Justin Houston, no Justin Madimbike. I mean, they're missing depth guys, so some of their starters are playing more than they would normally. I mean, it's just it's all those things adding up over a long season in which we've talked about the Pro Bowl players missing, the key contributors missing, and then COVID absences over these couple games. I can't can't say I'm shocked. You don't want to lose four games in a row. This team had flaws anyway, just with the injuries now, you know, with COVID absences and throwing new guys in there. And, oh, yeah, going up against pretty darn good quarterbacks. I mean, it's just one of those things where after a while, you can keep – I say this all the time to you. I remember – you know, going back 6 years ago, the year Joe Flacco and Steve Smith and Justin Forsett and Terrell Suggs and all these guys go down, and it's the only losing season in the John Harbaugh era. But next man up sounds great until you get to a certain point, and then it's a platitude that you slap on a t-shirt, because at some point in time, you do run out of quality football players. That's just reality. And the Ravens, let's face it, they've kind of been past that point for a while. They've been running on fumes for a while. This team hasn't looked like a championship caliber team really since about mid-October, that Chargers game we all remember. And hey, their resolve, the resiliency they've shown since then to continue to be in this position where, amazingly, because of the mediocrity in the AFC, because of an expanded playoff field, you know, with that third wild card, the Ravens actually moved up to the number seven seed, which is just incredible. But it speaks to this league. I mean, the Ravens had a miserable day, but the Chargers had a bad day in Houston. The Steelers had a really bad day in Kansas City. So with that in mind,
the football team swinging at each other.
Well, sure. But I'm just saying that in the AFC, you know, you kind of see where it is. And Kansas City has risen to the top, and, you know, Buffalo with a big win on Sunday. And look, I mean, there's some teams that I'm not going to say they're not good, but I think you get past those top three or four. There are a lot of question marks after that, and the Ravens fit into that somewhere. And amazingly, while they don't completely control their path to a playoff spot, they win these last two. I've looked at some sites, kind of puts them in that 90, 92, 94% range to make the playoffs, but it's not 100% anymore, and really speaks to having no margin for error remaining. And you're in a position now where you need to win two home games. And let's face it, if they don't win these two games, they don't deserve to make the playoffs, even after everything they've been through. So we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, if Sunday was any indication, again, you have to wonder if even getting some guys back this week, which they will. Now we'll see how quickly they get certain guys back. And, you know, we'll wonder about the quarterback position. We'll get into that. But, you know, you do wonder if they're not just running on fumes anymore, but maybe it the tank truly is empty. And you just wonder if this team has anything left.
Luke's going to be around all week. I like to say Merry Christmas, Merry After Christmas. Hope your ham, turkey, whatever it is you're eating, whatever it is you're celebrating, tons of pastries loaded around here as well. Luke will be here in Owings Mills, all brought to you by Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. I had Western fries on Christmas Day from the Providence Road location, so shout out there to everybody keeping it real and working on the holiday as well. You know, wearing my red Coons Ford with a little crown on it, I sat around and watched the Steelers just get slapped around by the Chiefs late in the day. And I thought to myself, man, the Ravens tried so hard for three, 4 years, the Jedi pass, getting blown out, losing the game with nobody there last year. And they finally climbed the mountain, and they were the best team in October. You know what I mean? Like, we'll always have October of 2021 before the plague. And that's probably one of the real hard parts, I think, for DaCosta, I think for Bisciotti, who's getting toward the end of his ownership reign, for Dick Cass, who's, you know, obviously in his 70s, for this group of leaders to have put something together all off season that felt like, you know, that it was going to be representative and that they were going to get on the field and they have a chance at the Chiefs early in the year and have a chance to be, dude, they were 8-3 5 minutes ago, right? So, you know, 8-3 feels like you can at least easily be 11-4 or wherever, like the Cowboys are right now or whatever, right? This is going to sting for them in the end, right? Like, and I know in some way we've watched Harbaugh's press conferences sort of devolve into what do you want me to do? And I got 20 guys sick in my building to the offseason cleanup of, where is Ronnie Stanley? What does Marcus Peters mean? Boy, I hope Marlon Humphrey comes back. Like, it's going to be a wild offseason, too, because the evaluative part of the season in totality is, I sat there on Sunday, and they've lost their last three games by 4 points, right? So you feel like you came close to all sorts of things. They came close to having Josh Johnson compete on Sunday on your behalf, at least on one side of the ball. He scored points. They led drives. And in the end, they're going to look back, and all that the offseason plans were gone before it started, to your point with Fort and Dobbins and Gus and like, and then Peters and the down the line, everything that happened here. But for them, they did their homework in the offseason. Now the offseason will begin again, where it's back to where are the holes? What do we need to fill? And I know we'll talk about their 30% to make it and their chances of winning two games, and the Rams have to fly all day to get here, and the Steelers stink, and we could win two games. They're not winning the Super Bowl. And Lamar might come back this week and be good enough to run around the next 2 weeks and win, and we're all embarrassed that they're going to Buffalo 3 weeks from now, right? Like, and we're having a bus, and we're talking about them being eliminated now and whatever. But in the big picture, the hardest part, I think, for the brass, for all of them, is this was designed and almost flew itself. I mean, we're in December, and they almost did it. I mean, if Lamar didn't stumble and fall and get fallen on 2 weeks ago, they would have had a chance, right?
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, look, I mean, they've accomplished a lot, considering how much they did lose even before the season started. But at the same time, and we talked about this when they were 8-3, did this team really have a championship feel at that point? I didn't think so. I mean, we were talking every week about how ugly it was, needing a fourth quarter comeback. And when you're talking about truly championship caliber teams, you're not talking about winning a lot of close games. You're typically talking about, yes, winning some close games against the best competition, but you're also blowing out the lesser teams.
Dude,
and this team just hasn't done that.
The old farts doing this. I'm watching the Chiefs 23-0, 30-0. And I'm like, boy, nobody's going to beat them. I mean, you know what I mean? I say like, and I start to see to what you're saying, what you want to identify, what the Patriots didn't identify here the last couple of weeks yet, right? With this kid quarterbacking, that he is a kid quarterbacking and they can't hold their water. And here come the Bills and they're going to try that. And but the Chiefs show that, right? And that's part of it. They didn't show that in October. If we're on the radio in Kansas City 5-6 weeks ago, we'd be talking about it. Yeah. But this is where those teams find a groove. You know, maybe even the Cowboys a little bit based on what happened the other night, that if there is a groove for them, they've found the lane to play what we traditionally think of as January football, right?
Yeah, yeah. And look, it's not even so much about style points. It's just trying to really look like that team that is capable of going on that 3 or 4 stretch where you play great. I mean, even the Ravens, and maybe it's coming, you know, in that Christmas miracle, Festivus miracle kind of sense, they go out there and they just blow the doors off the LA Rams in the way that the Ravens did against the Giants in 2012 after firing Cam Cameron and Jim Caldwell becomes the OC, and they're blown out by the Broncos, and Flacco's planking, you know, face down on the turf, and everyone's saying the season's over, and then suddenly it wasn't. So look, I'm not betting on that, just to be clear, but the point is you want to see that turning point, and that just has the Ravens have gone in the other direction. And so much of it just comes down to, and you mentioned the offseason, so much of this is just going to be getting guys back healthy and trying to assess where Ronnie Stanley is, you know, why trying to assess where Marcus Peters is in relation to how much he's going to be making and coming off of an injury. And what are you going to do with Lamar Jackson's contract in terms of, are you going to get him signed right now, or do you let this thing play out a little bit longer because you want to see something? And I'm not saying they're doubting that he's not their guy, but contractually, financially, these are things you have to consider. So I think there's some very obvious areas that they need to address, specifically offensive tackle, even if Ronnie Stanley comes back and is 100% fine moving forward. But you know, so much of it's just tough because you have lost so many people, and it's not at all what you drew up at certain positions. I mean, you know, Devontae Freeman and Latavius Murray, who would have thought in early August they'd be the running backs? I mean, no one would have thought that. I mean, you would have been laughed at, and you would have thought, okay, you know, did J.K. Dobbins, you know, you would have thought he got hurt, but then you would have thought, okay, well, where's Gus Edwards? You know, where's Justice Hill? I mean, you would have just been completely floored by that. But there's going to be kind of balancing that, balancing where they need to get younger, like on the defensive line. You know, Calais Campbell's a free agent. Brandon Williams is a free agent. I'm guessing Derek Wolfe's not going to be back after him missing the entire season and knowing his injury history, even though technically he is under contract. So, you know, right there, there's a position where you say they need to add a couple of defensive linemen, and specifically you'd like to see it in the draft. You'd like to see young guys coming in. So there are going to be a lot of questions, but at the same time, you look back at the season, and for me, I said this last year, and I think we talked about this a lot when they had their outbreak last year, you know, and go to Pittsburgh with a practice squad, you know, a roster that looks similar to what they dealt with on Sunday. But, you know, it really is a reminder of just how darn well everything went in 2019, and they were 14-2 and had this amazing run of blowout wins and looked like they were the best regular season team the league had seen since the 2007 Patriots. You know, we talked about the point differential, all that. And then they lost in the divisional round. And there was a sentiment at that point in time. Remember what it was? Well, they're ahead of schedule. You know, they're a year early. Lamar Jackson, you know, at the time was only, 22 years old. Everything's ahead of them. And look, they made the playoffs last year. They won a playoff game last year. They're still in it in week 17. So let's not be disparaging about where they are right now, as much as it's been difficult to watch these last few weeks. But at the same time, there's that sense that when you have a season like 2019 and it ends early, ends prematurely compared to expectations, that you're hoping or you're expecting or you're talking yourself into, they'll do that again. And it's really, really difficult to do that again because you're not going to get the same level of health. You're not going to get the ball bouncing your way, you know, even though they didn't rely on too much of that year with so much dominant play. But, you know, it's been one of those seasons where lots and lots of close games. Early on, they were winning them. Now they're not winning them. And then, of course, on Sunday, with a completely decimated secondary, you go up against the wrong team with Joe Burrow, who, you know, Wink Martindale gives a little tiny morsel of motivation, you know, a little dig there that he clearly took notice. And I mean, you just had guys running free all day, and you know, the Ravens didn't have a chance. As much as Josh Johnson gave them a chance, amazingly, and we'll talk more about him and the quarterback position, but you know, this defense, not nearly good enough to compete on any kind of a level where they look like a true contender on Sunday. That's stating the obvious.
Big appreciation for all the holiday and Christmas love over the weekend out on Twitter and Facebook and social media. Luke can be found at Baltimore Luke. He can be found out at Owings Mills, all brought to you by Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. We have wise conversations everywhere. We are bringing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out in January. We're going to start at Nacho Mama's down in Canton in a couple of weeks. We're going to be maybe doing some best of this week, some old conversations, a little bit of a look ahead to the Rams, but plenty more ahead with Luke as we wrap up a very, very disappointing loss in Cincinnati, and certainly a weird year all the way around for the division. We're going to continue our conversation. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. A little Ravens football and a lot of Baltimore positive heading into 2022.